ready to go.
All right. Okay. I'm wondering here. Let's see. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Voice to the Voiceless. I'm your host, Bronwyn Franklin. And today we have Jennifer Lee here. And Jennifer Lee likes to go by the name of Jay Lee, for short. Jay Lee is in prison in our Washington State Prison Monroe facility. And Jay Lee has been incarcerated since her 19th birthday. That's from 1994 till today. That's approximately 27 years. Jay Lee is very knowledgeable on topics concerning how transgender prisoners have been systematically and negatively treated within the corrections facility and the results of the same. Jay Lee will be sharing some of her personal challenges, struggles, and how incarceration in general has negatively affected her mental health. In the spirit of Trans Remembrance Day, this interview is dedicated to all the trans women, trans men out there who need to know that they are not alone in this struggle for recognition or equality. Jay Lee has been involved in human rights litigation for many years, currently as an advisory committee board member of Beyond These Walls organization. Also, Jay Lee is a jailhouse lawyer member of the National Lawyers Guild, along with many other advocacy organizations. So, Jay Lee, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you. So, tell me a little bit about your journey growing up.
That's a wonderful question. So the way I was raised was in a very strict religious home, what would be considered a Protestant Christian home, or more of a Presbyterian functional family. And in the late 70s and early 80s as a child growing up in the home, no one really taught me the subjects concerning how to advocate for myself, be in touch with my own emotions, to express myself in very humane and practical ways. So I was raised in a family that pretty much taught me to keep my emotions to myself. Also, if I was dealing with struggles in the home or outside the home, I was pretty much taught not to express that openly. So I grew up in a very sheltered environment, very strict, family-run environment, and I had not a lot of friends in elementary and junior high school. So my upbringing was very abusive from a very, very young age.
So who all was in the... Excuse me, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just thought it kind of contributes to my mental health, which led up to my incarceration.
Who all lived in the house with you then?
So my older brother, about a year older than me, we were the two children in the home. I later found out, of course, due to a divorce, there was a female child born to the same family, but we were told we had no other siblings, so that's another story. But I grew up with my older brother.
Okay, and who were the adults in the home?
So due to the divorce between my mother and father, and they separated, I was raised by my father's parents, my grandparents.
Wow. Wow. Did you ever have any interaction or encounters with your mother after the divorce?
No contact with my mother whatsoever until my arrest in 1994. So that's 1975 until 1994 at 19 when arrested. She heard about the news and came to the jail to visit me for the first time.
Wow, what was that like?
It was a trip. Heck, to be quite honest, I broke down immediately when I met with her for the first time. And She gave me a picture of my long-lost sister that I never knew I had. So family secrets run wild in my family.
I get it. I totally understand it, man, because my family have a lot of some of those secrets as well. Wow. Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot. How are you feeling now? What kind of relationship do you have with your mom and father now?
Sadly, after I went through the initial case proceedings and ended up in prison, I've lost contact with my mother and not quite sure where she's at. But I'm still in contact with my older brother and his side of the family. However, I do not have any contact with my father. And of course, my grandparents were passed away.
Okay. Okay. Wow. 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 That sounds really hard. So tell me, wow, that's a lot. When did you internally start identifying as she?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Thank you. So I knew really early on, at about 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, that I was more behaving as the females in the neighborhood, so to speak, or females in the school. And then I kind of tried to emulate that at a very young age. Never really understood why. And it wasn't until, you know, I got incarcerated that I realized what this whole transgender definition was. I unfortunately was never taught this or learned this as a child or teenager. So it took coming to prison to figure out who I was.
Okay. Yeah, that happens, and I can relate to that because that's when I found my identity of who I was too, was with inside the walls, because you have a lot of time to try to unpack some of the things and that life has thrown at you. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. When did you disclose this to your family? Were you able to share this with your dad or any other relatives?
So, long story short, I had done time with another transgender male to female person who was in transition. That person eventually got released, and then that person had some communications with my brother kind of behind the scenes. So my brother and his side of the family kind of knew about it before I had ever disclosed it. And then, of course, I brought it to my father through an email, which started him to no longer want anything to do with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened. You know, sometimes people don't know how to handle their feelings, and it's easier to shut them down than to work through them, because we don't really teach our children how to work through them, and we become adults that don't know how to work through them as well. So I'm sorry you experienced that, Jay Lee. That's awful. Wow. So tell me a little bit about what led up to the incarceration. You know, what had transpired in your home and around your home that led up to that event? And if at any time this becomes uncomfortable or you choose not to want to talk about it anymore, feel free to say that. It's okay.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I appreciate that. To sum up my childhood and my teenage years, which unfortunately led to where I am now, I would have to say that the household did have some good and beautiful moments, but that pretty much overshadowed all the negative stuff that was going on. So you have basically a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde family, or you have a family that on the surface seems everything's great, which typically happens in abusive households. I mean, on the surface, you know, everyone in the neighborhood thought everything was fine, but really, I was suffering daily abuse at the hands of my grandparents and my father. So, the abuse, of course, you can imagine. You know, when you're a vulnerable child, you know, you tend to be picked on by the bullies. And unfortunately, in my life, the bullies were my own family. So, my brother and I suffered multiple forms of physical abuse and sexual abuse, which really warped my frame of mind as far as, you know, as a child, you don't know whether it's appropriate or not, but you're told by the adults in the home that it is. So I grew up thinking that this was normal. What I didn't know is that I'm living in an abnormal family surrounded by other families thinking they live the same way and not knowing that this abuse has really distorted my my mind frame and the way I think. Surprisingly, I was able to graduate from junior high school and then high school in the late 80s, early 90s, and wanted to not see other children fall for the same abuse that I suffered from. So I wanted to get a job as a security officer and work in law enforcement or do some kind of field where I could help other people. And unfortunately, that led to an incident in Seattle where I was arrested under allegations that I vehemently denied and fought all the way through a trial, but that put me in the news in the early 90s. And due to that, and stress and the way I was raised and society, basically the court of public opinion, really distorting my image, destroying my future in college, I pretty much became suicidal. So on the one hand, we have a family that doesn't love or care for me, and they've showed that over the years, even though they wear a mask and tell other people that everything's great in the home. And then I have, being bullied at school growing up, and then we have the allegations in Seattle, which led to a trial. A lot of stress on my shoulders as a young teenager, which led to me desiring to end my own life at the age of, I had just turned 19, and at 19, wanting to shoot myself with a hunting rifle while I was out on bail for the Seattle incident, and wanting to shoot myself. But the day that I wanted to end my own life, unfortunately, was the day that I turned the gun towards my grandfather, trying to get his attention to the crisis I was going through. Unfortunately, he didn't notice me there. And then if I was trying to get his attention, I thought, well, hey, if I pull the trigger or make some kind of movement or noise, he would then realize, hey, I got a gun in my hand. Maybe I should help my grandchild. Unfortunately, I didn't know how to operate the weapon very well. And there was an accidental discharge of the bullet, which struck him and he died. Then this happened in Pierce County, Washington. So now we have Pierce County wanting to charge me with murder. And now I'm facing two trials and two sentences when I had just turned 19 years old.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Wow. So how have you worked through the feeling of being abused physically and sexually and emotionally and bullied all throughout most of your childhood? How have you worked through some of those issues after being incarcerated for 30 years? How have you been able to work through that?
Yeah, thanks for the question. It's really unfortunate that, you know, the system locked me up in an adult prison system when I had just turned 19. And as we know now, at 19, mentally, you're still a child. You're not fully, your brain's not fully developed. But back then, in the 90s, they treated me like an adult, threw me into the adult penal system in Washington, surrounded by more hardened criminals with really non-existent mental health programs or treatment. And then I had to learn how to become an adult or basically age out or mature inside a prison environment for the past 27 years.
Wow. Wow. Well, we're going to come up on a break in a very, very few seconds. I'm not sure exactly how long the call will be because it's like we're 19 minutes into the call. And we're going to continue on with Jaylee sharing her story. That's an incredible journey, and a brave journey that you have endured through in your life.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Yeah, I figured it was about coming to that. So
yeah, so I'll call you right back.
All right, thank you. So yeah, man, that's trauma reshapes the brain, and then to have a already immature logic system of a 19-year-old who's already had their brain rewired by trauma. How do you think? There's no way that this young person was not able to take and go through the things that they went through over those first 19 years. Okay, this is Jay Lee calling back, and we're going to finish wrapping this up. Jay Lee, are you there?
I sure am.
All right. Okay, welcome back. So can you just, you know, give me some ideas of what that was like, how you actually were able to unpack and work through the childhood trauma? That's one set of trauma. And then being incarcerated in prison system as an adult, that's a second trauma. You know, how have you navigated all of that?
Yeah, thank you for the question. To be quite honest, I'm really, really shocked and surprised that I'm even still alive today. So every day that I'm able to speak on these issues is a day of celebration. Due to my survival, I came into the system at 19 when people were being assaulted and stabbed and raped on a daily basis. We don't see too much of that today due to the state really cracking down on it. But back then, you know, young people such as myself were just tossed around with the older people as a way to placate the older convicts, and that was a way to keep the older convicts quiet and happy. So essentially, being responsible for understanding the culture of a prison system and ignoring the cries of the youth, because we didn't have the Prison Rape Elimination Act standards that we do now. So I've seen the system changed over the past almost three decades numerous times, some worse, some better. But as far as me surviving in here, I've had to do some things that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemies. I've had to do things that are very damaging physically, mentally, and psychologically, and sometimes I barely even hold on. But it's through the guidance of some mentors that I've gotten to know, and the organizational work that I do, that has kept me focused on the positive and trying to ignore the negative. But I do have to acknowledge that I have become quite mentally strong over the years, and I would even say physically strong to withstand all of this and be able to share my story. What's the goal, of course, to expose it and try to change it for the better.
Absolutely. So briefly, can you name four good things that you've seen change over the 30 years you've been there, and then name four things that still need to be changed?
Yeah, great question. So the things that I've seen change, I'll try to see if I can pick out four. I know at least two.
So first
and foremost, there's less sexual abuse and sexual harassment due to a lot more oversight, which is a huge step in this state. I'm not saying it never happens, because sometimes you still have those incidents, and that's unfortunate, but there have been a lot of strides to prevent this over the years, and I'm an example of helping to try and change that culture. And two, as far as, you know, how staff and inmates speak to one another and how the culture used to be compared to where it is now, there has been quite a significant change with attitudes and behaviors between conversations that staff inmates or staff and prisoners have back and forth. So there's a lot more, seems a lot more respect and mutual understanding, especially during these trying times during COVID. And I'm not saying there's no stress here, but it seems like the people that I know that want to go home, be home with their family, friends, and loved ones, they're not trying to instigate problems with staff. And then, of course, the staff who typically are tired of coming in here and working, they don't want to come in here and rile up inmates and get them mad and then have an incident. So it seems like today, compared to what it was in the early 90s, there's a lot more mutual respect between staff and inmates. So those are the first two that come to mind.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And what are some things that you think still needs to change?
Yeah, so I would say, first and foremost, a lot of the policies and procedures that are used with how staff deal with, like, say, when we get called to go down and eat a meal, it's not consistent. A lot of the times are later and later, it seems like, or for example, when they're doing count, they tend to not be able to count the bodies in the cell, and they have to recount over and over again. I just experienced that the other day. So a lot of procedures that staff are supposed to follow are still not really being followed. There tends to be some negligence here with, or a lackadaisical attitude with the procedures that these staff are supposed to do. And the second one that comes to mind is that we're not getting a lot of outside recreation activities or activities that would keep us healthy, mind, body, and soul. A lot of the rec programs and education programs used to have here have been non-existent due to COVID. And even before COVID, we were losing a lot of funding for education and recreation. A lot of our programs being shut down, staff resigning, retiring, or just leaving, and some staff being terminated due to misconduct. So I would say there needs to be more oversight with how policies or and practices are done. There doesn't seem to be enough of that. And we need more educational programming here and recreational opportunities.
Okay. Yeah, more college. And recreation. Tell me more.
Yeah, I'm a little biased on answering that because I'm a musician and played drums for over 30 years. So it's one of the things that helps me with my mental health is to play the instrument. But we used to have a music room program here, and now it's one of the programs that got shut down. Besides music, though, we had a state library here, or state branch library, that was shut down. We've had programs designed to help cultural groups. Those were taken from us. We've had annual events that are no longer happening here. We've had food fundraisers and other different programs to give some kind of incentives for good behavior. Some of those have been taken. So those are just some examples.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. What do you think? And I'm going to come back around because I'm going to come back and ask you, tell me about some of the work you're doing with organizations. But what do you think needs to be done, or how does it need to be done, or what can we do to help bring some of those type of recreational and just human resources back inside the prison system in Washington State?
Great question. First and foremost, the lawmakers in Washington nowadays tend to be really more pro-prisoner than they ever have been. And it's going to take outside folks to call up their legislative members in Washington or find out who they are that represent the districts where their prisons are situated to remind those legislative representatives about what has been taken and what needs to be brought back, because, you know, regardless of your opinion about those who made poor choices and end up in prison, they're still human beings on the inside. Constitutional rights of prisoners don't stop at the prison door or the front entrance. They come inside the prison too. And at the end of the day, society is partly responsible for the erection of prisons in your own backyard. And by the lawmakers building prisons, then society becomes responsible for what happens inside those prisons, whether we like it or not. So we do have a lot of say-so, and we have voting rights. If we don't like what our lawmakers are doing, we can vote them out of office. And so I would encourage society to use your voice to press upon and remind your lawmakers of the value of these programs that need to be brought back.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Okay. Thank you. So, Jay Lee, tell us about the organizations and the stuff that you're doing now that's also helping you maintain your resiliency and mental health stability.
Thank you for a wonderful question. So I'm going to highlight two. Beyond These Walls out of Portland, Oregon. These folks are godsend. John Chaplow and Tristan Reese, who have been on CNN. Just quick history. Tristan Reese was the trans man who was pregnant. As you all may know or have heard, Tristan was born female but is transitioning into male, and she still had the ability to get pregnant. So her partner, John, which is also known as Biff, they got pregnant, and it was a big splash on CNN. But they started this organization called Beyond These Walls, and you can look them up online. They do a lot of outreach and a lot of support for folks like me, whether you're transgender or not, or just an ally. They're there for you. And anybody that you know that's incarcerated in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and around the nation that needs support and help, just reach out to Beyond These Walls. But as a advisory committee member on their board of directors, we have a lot of funding now. We have a lot of grants that are going towards helping those like myself incarcerated who need that support. And if you really want to feel that you're doing your part and you feel led to do this, reach out to Beyond These Walls, and they'll spread your joy and wealth around to help those that are desperately in need. And then the second organization I want to highlight is the National Lawyers Guild out of New York City. You can look them up at nlg.org. That's nlg.org. They have a mass incarceration committee that I'm a part of, and we're trying to end mass incarceration in the United States, because not only does mass incarceration affect the prisoners, their family, friends, and loved ones, but it has a detrimental impact on you, who may not have ever been involved with those incarcerated or the criminal justice system, but it will trickle down to your neighborhood eventually, both economically, and if someone who's been abused gets out, will have resentment for society, and then you're, unfortunately, you may be subject to someone who feels society let him down, and then you're faced with that person when that person gets out. So it does affect society if we don't do something to try and change the way we treat those who have made poor choices and ended up in prison.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, there's 2.5 million people in the United States in prison currently, and 50% of those individuals have a mental health diagnosis, you know, and many of those had diagnosis before going in, but many have acquired diagnosis after getting there, because the trauma of being institutionalized is hard. Excuse me. Wow. So yeah, you're doing a lot of great, great work and great things, Jaylee. So I have one final question, and then, you know, you can share whatever else you'd like to share, because we still have probably about 10 or 15 minutes. What is the one goal that you have for yourself when you're released? And I also want you to talk a little bit about, if you can, what's going on with your legal case now?
Well, thank you. My first and foremost goal of getting released is to get out there and work for a lot of that wants to assist me in my career to become a human rights lawyer or to assist with civil litigation, I do have a couple of law offices that are interested in hiring me and help me get through law school, which would be a dream come true, because not only have I lived this experience and been on this side of the bars, so to speak, or the walls, I know firsthand what happens when policies are not followed correctly, or you have officers or staff that abuse their authority, and the harm that happens trickles down to society. So we definitely have to change the culture and the education of our correctional staff, and not only educate them, but show that, like Tara Simmons in Washington State, who's now a lawmaker, she was incarcerated, got out, went to law school, passed the bar, and became a lawmaker. So like Tara Simmons, or like Sean Hopwood, we have to continue to show that, yes, we can contribute to society, we can be successful, if society will give us that chance.
Absolutely.
And not only do I want to be a lawyer, but I want to get involved with music, whether it's through a church ministry or just doing secular music. Definitely want to pursue my music career and write an album one day that can be used as a way to gather some funds to help those that I've left behind inside the prison system. So I definitely have some very positive goals that I'm looking forward to doing. And then most importantly, my brother runs the podcast From Inside Out on YouTube. So you can go to YouTube and look up From Inside Out. He's doing wonderful work to try and expose corruption within the correction system as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm surprised you said something that really surprised me when you said that, you know, you want to do music and you really want, and you're going to want to, you want to do it in the church setting. I think we have maybe, okay, I'm looking at the exact clock and I think we have like 4 minutes. So how did that come about? How are you doing music? Have you written any music that you might want to display now? Because I might be able to help you with that. And, or your brother, you know, can put it, you know, we can do that. Technology is amazing. But you said doing it in a church setting. So I know that was part of the challenge growing up. Where are you at with that? What is your belief system? How are you moving forward with your spiritual beliefs?
Yeah, great question. So as I said before, raised more of a Christian household that turned out to be a very hypocritical household. I got the really negative impression of what Christianity was. But as I grew up and matured, I developed into a more of a Jewish mindset, or a Messianic Jewish mindset, where in Judaism and Christianity, they kind of mix together. So, and I do more of the Jewish mysticism, like the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life, and I do some Buddhism too. So there's just a mixture, but I think that the music that comes out of that type of religious belief can be very powerful. I've witnessed some very powerful movements in the spirit, and that has helped a lot of different people while I've been locked up. So I kind of would probably start either a music ministry or be involved with one that has those kind of guidelines. But trying to find a way to build that up.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. The spiritual piece is you connect it, because most religions out here has taken different pieces from everything along the way and created their own perspective of it, when in reality, right, it is it's a spiritual journey. You know, and I can relate to the Messianic Christianity because I've studied it, and I agree that's a huge piece for me, is taking it back to the roots. Wow, that's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. You're awesome, Jaylee. Any final words or closing words? We got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes at the most.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to share portions of my story. You can find out more, of course, by going to voicesfrominsideout@gmail.com. That's voices, from inside out at gmail.com. My brother runs that email address and can reach out to you on my behalf. And then, of course, stay in touch with Bronwyn here at Voice for the Voiceless. She can keep you updated on my progress. But most importantly, I may be getting resentenced soon due to a recent court decision.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
And Bronwyn can share more about that if you have questions.
All right. Thank you so much, Jay Lee. I really appreciate you coming on Voice to the Voiceless today and sharing your journey with your trauma and your prison incarceration. You are a resilient person, and I appreciate you so much. Thank you, and I'll talk with you soon, okay?
I sure appreciate everything you've done.
You have 30 seconds remaining.
Oh. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Wow, amazing woman. So you just heard Jay Lee, who's a trans woman who served 27 years in the Washington State Correctional Facility. She went in as a 19-year-old young man convicted of shooting her grandfather. And because the laws in this country don't recognize mental health states, nor do they recognize mental health trauma, they're starting to come around to realize that there's a such thing as a juvenile mind, and the juvenile brain has not been fully developed into having all the different logical ways of thinking as an adult mind that may be, say, 25 or older. There used to be a time in throughout our country and throughout our thing where people would say they couldn't get their inheritance into or trust funds or different things until they were 25 years old. And that's because most of the young, your brain has not fully been developed, you know, and to add the rewiring of your brain due to trauma, Through physical abuse, mental abuse, sexual abuse, your brain is just a mess at 19. And to be sentenced to life without parole, that's huge, you know? And the question I didn't think to ask Jay Lee is, what kind of support besides his brother will she have coming out of incarceration? Because now you are conditioned to a certain way of living. You've lived that way for almost 30 years. You know, and then Jay Lee talked about how the funding has become pro-prison, but no resources. And there's so much of that going on now. You know, they can't get college education. They can't get play music. They don't have the recreational things that they need to continue to be function as human. And then we expect them to come out here in society and function as human. But we have taken away all the things that connect them to the outside and giving them a sense of a different reality. We need to start talking to our lawmakers, you know, because I'm gonna tell you, it may not be you in prison, it may be your loved one in prison. And just like as I journeyed along the way, I never thought I would end up in prison. My parents never thought I would end up in prison. I was not doing what we call criminal behavior. My crime was having a mental health diagnosis that had not been properly treated. My crime was being a victim of trauma that had not been properly treated. Jay Lee's crime originally was a trauma survivor. she started out as a trauma victim. Bullying in school, bullied at home, assaulted sexually and physically. That was the original crime. We need to take a look at our society. Look at our system. Look at what's going on in and around the United States when it comes to our incarcerated loved ones or neighbors or distant cousins or relatives. Because 9 times out of 10, they are trauma victims. They have come from some sort of physical, emotional, or sexual, or all of the above trauma of abuse. As I end for today, I really and truly would like us to really take a look at our legislative system, our Senate system, our Congress, and write some letters, bringing education back to the prison system, bringing music back to the prison system. Let's stop the school to prison pipeline by also adding those things back into our school systems, music class, sports, sewing, cooking, things that we need to go through life as human beings. Driver's education. When I drive down the street and I look at how these people drive, I'm like, they didn't get driver's education like I got. They don't realize that when you come to a light that may be out in an intersection, that's a four-way stop. You know, just because the light is not working don't mean just drive through. You know? Change lanes. You turn on a blinker. You know? Wow. It's just kind of devastating out here. But again, this is Bronwyn. You know? And this is Voice to the Voiceless.